You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 20 February, we've got U.S. fourth quarter GDP due, 3:30 our time, expected 3%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Kieran Whitten from Anchor. I want to quickly touch on the gold field, not the results so much, but the dividend, strong dividend, and then $353 million in additional returns. Nice for shareholders. And then the big question, where would he be putting new money right now? Wandile Shalobo from Agribiz Chamber of SA, possible tariff deal with China. I'm also going to ask about foot and mouth and crop with all the rain we've been seeing. And then thoughts for me on the wash sale. Selling to try and get smart with CGT, that 40,000 Rand exemption. Be careful. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. The big JC property stocks trading at premiums following the strong recovery by SA REITs in recent years. And Business Day, Kumba CEO applauds Transnet reforms as railed iron ore volumes rise 6%. Collaborative efforts buoy sentiment, but maintenance backlog still clouds outlook. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down 0.3%, NASDAQ off 0.4%. Easter's mostly red, Sydney up a quarter of a percent, that's the exception, Tokyo down 1.3%, Hong Kong is open again and down 0.6%, and Tencent down 2%. Commodities mixed, gold futures 5,013, Brent 71.84, and then on the red side, platinum 271 and palladium 1,712. The Rand is 16.15, Bitcoin 67,300, and top 40 opening call, green open 570 points or 0.5% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Trading now with Kieran Whitten from Anchor. Kieran, always appreciate the early morning. The goldfields numbers, as I was saying in the intro there, I mean, obviously, they're making money hand over fist. The question from shareholders is, where does that money go? We're seeing debt paid down, but we are seeing special dividends coming through. We are seeing share buybacks coming through. Earlier in the week, we had Pan, who did a maiden interim dividend. This is very much what gold miner investors can look forward to now, are frankly dividends galore as they profit from the high gold price.
Good morning, Simon, and good morning to all the listeners. Yeah, the high gold price allowing Goldfields to pay out absolute bumper dividends here to shareholders. And the other aspect of having all this free cash flow is that they're also able to continue to invest in its business. And we do like the long-term profile behind Goldfields' strategy. Mm-hmm. They have some long life assets. They do have the strongest balance sheet of the South African miners, and this does give it optionality to set up its business for the long term. But like you've said, the key highlight is the 54% free cash flow payout. This was quite a bit above consensus, and the cash generation out of this sector has just been remarkable. I think all the management teams will be having a big smile on their faces, as well as shareholders for that matter. And yeah, the gold price high, we've obviously covered this in detail for a whole number of factors. And I think it's hard to see these trends changing. And this should keep the gold price high. So I think long may it continue in the gold sector.
100%. And I mean, the gold miners are reporting what revenue gold price is at sub 4,000. Gold's $1,000 above that. So it's more to come. The next follow-up question is, and yesterday, thinking around sort of someone who's coming to market, got some new money. I don't know. Maybe they've taken profit somewhere. Maybe they've got, I don't know, they've got some new money. Where would you be putting new money into the market right now as we sit here in February 2026?
Yeah, Simon, I think it is important to start off with the caveat that people who have differing investment opinions on where to put money, there's an analogy that says that they simply just have different time horizons. So it does, of course, depend for how long you want to invest the money for. And then you've also got to throw in your risk factor there. And that kind of leads you to a specialized answer. But I think what is worth pointing out is that there's been three main conversations we've been having with clients at the moment. The first is a strong rand and a weak dollar.
Yeah.
Interestingly, this has been hurting the performance when reported in rands. The second, which we covered, is the high gold price. And the third, and a bit more recently, which is causing nervousness, is obviously artificial intelligence across the oceans. And this has swung from a heavy outperformer over the past few years to now an underperformer this year. And my current view on where to invest right now would be based on a few core beliefs. Mm-hmm. First is that South Africa's outlook is more positive than it has been in decades. But I do think that the rand has been driven by cyclical factors to a large extent, such as higher gold and platinum prices. And I do actually think that this could possibly unwind with time. Second is that the US dollar is going to remain the global reserve currency for the foreseeable future. Yeah. Third is that diversification is more important than ever. And the fourth one, which I think will answer your question, is that artificial intelligence is about to change the world more than many people are aware. We've seen this inside Anchor in the past few weeks. The rate of change is, to be honest, quite scary. And we've obviously seen the big sell-off in US tech and software. And we think a lot of shares have been caught up indiscriminately in this sort of sell-everything software sell-off. And I think there's a rare setup now where fundamentals are actually holding up. Earnings out of a lot of those companies were quite strong, but sentiment has collapsed. And I think it's creating a window of opportunity for new investors to get involved there. And unfortunately, I think lastly, Simon, investing in South African companies doesn't really give you access to the exposure of artificial intelligence, which is a bit unfortunate, I think, for a lot of South Africans. Investors.
Yeah, we really don't. I suppose we could say some NASPAS process gives you 10 cents, but beyond that, not at all. And your point is, I mean, when you're saying the artificial intelligence, I mean, I take your point. Results coming through were insanely strong. The market got spooked perhaps by the CapEx spend, but there's lots of ways to do it. There's lots of different places in the value chain where you can invest and manage both diversification and perhaps risk.
Yeah, exactly, Simon. So I think obviously investing in Europe doesn't really give you exposure to this AI theme. And we have actually been allocating more money, interestingly, to Europe and even emerging markets than we have done in the past, let's say, decade. But I think it is the time to be contrarian with regards to this AI sell-off and take advantage of the weakness in something that we have actually long-term conviction in. Obviously, there's been a big debate about AI related CapEx spending and the disruption in the software space, which I think is definitely going to happen. But you've got companies, for example, like Microsoft, that just has a huge platform. Most enterprises in the world are using their software, but it's been caught up and is trading at the lowest PE in years now. Nvidia as well has sentiment that I think as well as Microsoft, that make the shares no longer priced for perfection, which they've been for a number of years. So those are just two examples of companies with many, many customers that I think will survive this latest AI software scare.
Yeah, I mean, in the Nvidia, I remember when the forward PE was running at about 70. It's now in the mid-20s. It's a whole different game there. We'll leave it there. Kieran Whitten from Anchor, always appreciate the early morning insights. And our poll today is back to that Goldfields special dividend. Is this how you want your gold miners to be rewarding shareholders? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Wandile Shalobo. He's chief economist at the Agricultural Business Chamber of South Africa. Wandile, I appreciate the time. Lots of news you've been writing around the signing of a China-Africa framework agreement. Help us understand it at a top level. What is this? I mean, in essence, as I understand, it's about tariffs. But I mean, are we getting zero tariffs into China? What's the story?
The story here, Simon, begins in China, when they had the China-Africa summit that typically takes place there. The leadership in China came out and said, look, we will now be looking at extending tariff-free access for a range of goods coming from the African continent. And of course, they began rolling this, which they call China-Africa Framework Agreement. And each country has to assess and see if it signs in. And of course, it excluded one country, which is our neighbors in Eswatini, but all a range of other African countries included into this. It is not a free trade agreement per se, because that falls under a different aspect as prescribed by the WTO. But here, it's really China's approach to deepen their trade with the African continent. You could think of it as almost their AGOA version of approach.
That was going to be my point. It kind of sounds like AGOA. And the process now is to decide what goods will form part of this agreement. It's not a lock-in. It's not everything. We've got to sort of negotiate what will be included.
Absolutely. It's a sort of an AGOA framework, but of course, it doesn't carry all of the generosity of AGOA, because remember, AGOA was a unilateral one-way approach where the U.S. extended to Africa, but without deep demands from the African continent. My understanding is that after some time, China has begun also thinking about the reciprocity approach of saying, you have to do something for us as well. And I think then under that context, it changes the approach a bit. But I still think that as South Africa, as we engage with it, there are certain industries that certainly will benefit, like the farmers and the others. But there are others that we need to be careful in this engagement, the auto industry and the broader manufacturing, because that carries some risks. And lastly, most importantly, is really the question of thinking about how should we be moving to something that is more stable, which is a bilateral free trade agreement with, of course, a protection in the sensitive industries that we have.
And that's a great point. I mean, that's the longer term goal. In the immediate, I mean, with the tariffs coming out of the US, we are still sitting at 30%, notwithstanding AGOA having been renewed for another year. And there's some T's and C's of products that aren't part of that 30%. But China is a market that must be of interest to a lot of our economy, particularly to farmers, to agriculture.
I mean, China is a country that is of interest to us. I mean, it's our top trading partner. So when you are easing on tariff, you basically then are assessing if there could be possibilities for other industries to enter there. The only difference is that our manufacturing, as well as our auto industry, perhaps is not as cost effective as what you see in China for a whole range of issues, which is why for me, I think towns like East London, Port Elizabeth, part of Pretoria that have auto industry, we need to be thoughtful as to how we protect those. But certainly for the farmers, which is the industry that I work in, China is one of the markets that is important. I mean, when you think about the global agricultural importers, China is the second largest agricultural importer. They spend, Simon, over $218 billion importing food products each year. And think about it, we hit a record last year of $15 billion US dollars. Into China, we have less than a billion in that over $218 billion. So we want to see more market access there. And I think with lower tariffs and easing up phytosanitary barriers, we will then be able to see better participation in the Chinese market.
What are some of the agri sectors that are potential for China? You know, I mean, we've got, for example, you know, we've got sectors all over. I know a lot of our abalone, for example, goes to Asia. We've got a wine sector. We've got the sheep and the wool. What are potential sectors that might interest China for it?
I mean, right now, there are some industries that are dependent on China. When you think about the wool farmers in the Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, Free State, about 70% of our wool exports go to China. Citrus, we are starting to enter China. Wine, we are there, but we're facing tariffs of between 14 and 20%. Macadamia, we are hit by 12% tariffs. And of course, abalone also facing some tariffs. The core thing then is about if we can lower those tariffs or even bring them to zero, we begin then to be competitive vis-a-vis our competitors like Australia, our friends down there in Peru and Chile. And when I look at our basket of products, really, Simon, the entire fruit basket in South Africa, the meat side, the grains, because I say this because when I look at what China buys in that $218 billion they spend each year, they buy from the world market stuff that South Africa produces. So fruit, meat and grains industries and wine stands to benefit if we are able to secure better tariff levels there.
Okay, let's hope we get them. You mentioned meat, foot and mouth disease. The minister has announced that we are manufacturing the vaccine for it. It's still, my sense is, it's a huge task still ahead, a long way to go, but we are making progress and a vaccine is a big step. Is that a fair comment?
I mean, I think the core thing, Simon, really to first underscore here, which I keep repeating everywhere when I have an opportunity, mm-hmm. is that the red meat and dairy products are safe for consumption.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Both South Africans must continue on that. The reason they are temporarily blocked in some of the export markets is because of how this disease is categorized. And of course, each country tries to protect so that it doesn't go there. It's not because of dangers of consumption. In terms of controlling it in South Africa, I mean, right now, we will be receiving some of the vaccines more from March onwards. We already received some decent volumes. Mm-hmm. And I think that the minute we are able to vaccinate with speed at the high risk areas. Here, I'm talking about the Natal Midlands area, yeah. Free State, Gauteng and Northwest, then we will make inroads. But I think Simon will begin to see much more better progress from March onwards.
Okay, it's moving forward and that's the important thing. The other important thing, it is safe for human consumption. Can't stress that enough. And last question, we saw some horror rains in January up in Limpopo and in Mpumalanga. And I imagine that must be absolutely tragic for farmers in those regions. I mean, they are literally flooded out. But more broadly, how have the rains been across our farmlands so far this season?
Could you raise that point, Simon? Because there, I'm worried about the quality of the crop that we will get, particularly citrus and the others. And this is a crop that is usually for export markets. And I think that if the quality is not as good, what we will end up with is a glut in the domestic market, which then will bring the prices down. Of course, that is always good for a consumer from a consumer price inflation aspect. But of course, for profitability, as well as the journey that we have been in, of powering through on the export side, that may begin to be an issue. But we will really get a clearer understanding of the impact on the fruit quality from around about mid-April onwards. But we were fortunate that by the time it rains, we had already harvested the potatoes and some of the vegetables. So the key issue is really about the quality of the fruit in those areas. But I would say it's not as critical, but it's something that is of concern.
And potatoes is good news because potato prices were going crazy at a while. They come down nicely, but we need potatoes. They're a staple.
Absolutely.
They're a staple for our diet. Wandile Shilobo, Chief Economist, Agricultural Business Chamber of South Africa. Appreciate the time.
Give your money the return it wants without taking a flight with the Stanlib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
So it's end of February and, of course, end of tax year. So a lot of us are looking at tax affairs. And one of them is capital gains tax. This is tax that you pay when you sell long-term investments. The first 40,000 is exempt from CGT. So you bought something for 100, you sold it for 140,000. That 40,000 is not taxed. Anything above it is taxable. And long-term is typically considered 3 years. So what a lot of folks will say is, well, let's take that 40,000 and then reinvest all the money back into the same stock or ETF. In other words, I don't know, let's say you've got a top 40 ETF, you've got your 40,000 profit, you sell it today, money clears, Monday you go and buy it again, and you've essentially changed your entry price and dodged 40,000 tax. Nice. But SARS is going to call this a wash sale. Well, the wash sale terminology comes from tax Tim, not from SARS. But what essentially SARS would look at and say, yeah, we see what you have done here. You've basically offset some tax down the line. The short version, either buy something else, in other words, sell a top 40 ETF and go and buy a S&P 500, totally legit. Or tax Tim advisors, wait a month to not be called a wash sale. That's it for today. We were chatting with Kobus Lutz yesterday, Pan-African Resources. Massive results, massive profitability, interim dividends and so on. And I asked about hedging. Do you start to hedge with gold at $5,000 an ounce? He was no. Shareholders want exposure to the share price. We asked you and it was evenly split. A third said, yep, nope, you want full exposure. Another third said, yeah, come on, hedge, lock in those prices and the the last third said maybe at least a little bit of hedging. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday, turning out the noise.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.